It is Friday, and as always, that means it's time to talk about issues that made headlines this week in Idaho. And joining me for our Friday Reporter Roundtable are Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, and Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television. As always, thanks for taking some time out of your Friday.
Sure. Hello. Thank you.
Want to start right away, Betsy, with this legislative interim committee that's looking at possible campaign finance reform, correct?
That's right. And the same interim committee last year endorsed some very sweeping changes, and they didn't really get anywhere in this year's legislative session. Now, the effective date wasn't going to be for another year anyway. And so rather than try to push if legislators were maybe a little reluctant, the interim committee decided to take another year and refine the proposals. And that's what they're doing now. But they are still looking at just as sweeping of changes, in particular to make candidates and committees report more often and in more detail. And for as a reporter who looks at campaign finance reports, that would be so welcome. I mean, we just had our post-primary campaign finance reports come in 30 days after the primary election. And I was looking it up thinking, let's see, when does the next quarterly report come in? You know what? There isn't one. There's not another report till October 10th.
Oh, my goodness.
That's ridiculous. That we have major races going on. Why wouldn't we want to know who is backing the campaigns, what they're spending their money on now, so that the voters can be informed all along?
And so this would be things potentially putting those in place. So there's
what the committee's been talking about is monthly reporting for at least the 4 months before the election, possibly all year round, and a lot of other changes as well. Some of the new things that they brought up at this week's meeting included really cracking down on people who don't file in time, which current law doesn't necessarily call for.
And we had some issues with that, didn't
we? That's
right.
We had several candidates this year who did not file in time and were not subject to fines. And then they also talked about several other ideas that could be significant. One of them is to close the loophole under which the mailing that was called the Idahoan was not subject to campaign finance reporting requirements because it qualified under the newspaper exemption, because our newspaper exemption says it's not a newspaper if it's published by a candidate or a political party, but what it leaves off is a political committee. And the federal law on the same thing has all three of those listed. So the change the committee is now looking at proposing the legislature would add in political committee.
Because that Idahoan sure looked like a newspaper. Let's talk about a Medicaid expansion. It will go to the ballot come November.
That's right.
This group, Idahoans for Healthcare, got enough votes. But Betsy, before we came on the program, you made a really good point because we're going to have two initiatives come on the ballot.
That's right.
And there's a big difference in the amount of signatures, but the money spent too.
I thought it was really interesting because the Medicaid expansion initiative, both initiatives needed 56,192 valid signatures. Medicaid expansion, they got over 75,000. That's more than 19,000 more than they needed. The horse racing betting machine initiative, on the other hand, got about 59,000, about 4,000 more than they needed. But the backers of that initiative spent almost three times as much to collect 15,000 fewer signatures, which I just thought was interesting.
Bill?
Well, I was just going to note there's a connection between the two stories Betsy's just talked about, which is, you know, the campaign financing issue. We did not know how much money was being spent to get those measures qualified for the ballot until essentially they were over and done. And the Medicaid expansion folks started out as a really broad grassroots campaign, but they got help from some out-of-state groups with a significant amount of money. And I think now that the kind of the emotional and good feelings about this effort have passed, we're going to see a much more focused examination of the merits of these issues as opposed to the emotional ones. And I noticed that we are now starting to get detailed analyses on the pros and cons of the Medicaid expansion, including how much it would actually save Idahoans.
Right. And we spoke with Representative Christy Perry and Representative John Vanderwoude yesterday. And interesting having two Republicans, but on different sides of this issue. And you know, Christy Perry was one of the campaign co-chairs for Idahoans for Healthcare. She is very much in favor of seeing this Medicaid expansion. Representative Vanderwoude talked more about it wasn't about the fact that he doesn't believe that we need something like this. He is concerned, as you said, Bill, about how much it's going to cost. Melissa?
And the interesting thing about this is previously a lot of the discussion in the legislature has focused on we want a solution. We as Republican lawmakers want a solution to this, but this isn't it. We want other ideas. What's going to be on the ballot doesn't allow room for other ideas. It's not going to be a, if not this, then how about this? It's a straight up yes or no. And I think that's going to change the dynamics of the discussion because there are a lot of people statewide in these far-flung counties in Idaho who are hurting. And I'm not just talking about people who are uninsured or underinsured. There are county officials who are seeing what's going on in their communities who are very conservative and limited government, mm-hmm. but they're seeing what's happening to the county budget. They're seeing what's happening within their communities, and they're tired of the legislature kicking the can down the road. They've heard for so many years, well, we want a solution, but it's not Medicaid expansion. That solution hasn't come. And I think that's going to affect the tone of the debate moving forward.
I think that's a really good point because what got us to this point where this is on the ballot was 6 years of debate in mm-hmm. the legislature, multiple recommendations from state task forces saying, do this, expand Medicaid. The legislature saying, well, we want to do something, but not this. We want to do something else. They never came up with anything else. So after 6 years, citizens were frustrated enough to put it on the ballot themselves.
Bill?
You've seen this philosophical battle in the legislature over essentially are we going to do anything to advance a version of Obamacare or not? And now it's moving out of the philosophical area into the real world. And even conservatives around the state, they may have insurance, but they have families and friends who are without insurance or who are struggling to get insurance, or they know of rural hospitals that are concerned about being able to survive without revenue stream. So I think it's a much different conversation we're about to embark on.
And what was interesting yesterday with the conversation about this is Representative Vanderwood was saying, yes, 90% of it would be covered by the federal government, but the state has to pick up that other 10%. And that is a hefty number. However, Representative Perry said, but if we had done this 6 years ago, it would have been 100% covered. Mm-hmm. So, and she flat out said, you know, the legislature could have made different choices 6 years ago.
And that's what she's been saying this entire time. She has been committed, you know, especially in the last couple years. You have seen her really put her neck out on the line. She, of course, ran for Congressional mm-hmm. District 1 and lost that primary race. But she had a lot to lose, especially considering that campaign. And she still spoke out about this. This is not a bipartisan issue anymore. This is not a partisan
issue
anymore. This is a nonpartisan issue at this point.
It's a much broader issue.
It really is.
And it was interesting, too, because we talked about how other notably conservative states are putting this on the ballot, like Utah has this same issue come on the ballot come November. But they have, as you said, Melissa, we don't have a if not this, then what? On the ballot come November in Utah, they have a tax increase that goes along with it to pay that 10%.
And that would change the dynamic of the discussion. You know, I received a healthcare journalism fellowship along with two other reporters from Idaho, and it's a bunch of journalists from Western states who are covering healthcare, and we were comparing and contrasting all of the different Medicaid expansion issues and related issues in our states, and most of these are conservative states. We're talking Wyoming and Montana mm-hmm. and New Mexico, but a lot of the states that are in this group have taken actions to address the problem. Idaho hasn't. The legislature lost that opportunity, and now it's in the hands of the voters.
And also, Idaho is unique in the way that we pay for care for those people who fall into this coverage gap right now, because we have this system through our state catastrophic fund and through local property taxes directly, where we pay the catastrophic medical bills of people who can't afford to pay after the fact, after everything's gone to pot, and then we file liens against them and against their estate after they died to try to get the money back, and we don't get it back. We have an incredibly inefficient and many would argue perhaps not well-based mm-hmm. way of approaching these costs now, and this is an alternative that actually would cost us a lot less.
The Idaho Center for Fiscal Policy makes that very point that this is very close to being a wash if you don't take into consideration the kind of Rube Goldberg system the state and the counties have for picking up these costs. But if you do away with that, with their costs, according to the Center for Fiscal Policy, it's a big gain for Idaho taxpayers.
And this isn't new ground that they're covering at all. You know, every single group that has ever looked at this, nonpartisan medical groups, say the cheapest, most fiscally responsible thing to do is address these issues before people get catastrophically ill and before those medical bills go through the roof. I mean, that's not a partisan, that's not a pro-Medicaid expansion argument. That's just fact. Preventative medicine and looking at the problem holistically is the cheapest way to do it.
And Representative Perry right here yesterday even said, she was like, if you don't think you're not paying for this right now, she was like, you're very naive, because we are all paying for it right now.
Absolutely.
So moving on to something else completely different. U.S. Congressman Raul Labrador has a bill. It's not passed yet, but he wants to rename the Pay Up Post Office honoring Herman Killebrew.
That's right. And actually, it did pass the House
this
week. Oh, it
did? Okay.
It still has to pass the Senate and get the president's signature to become law. But this was a significant milestone for this bill, which Representative Labrador introduced a year ago.
And what happened this week is that the All-Star game was played in Washington, D.C., and Killebrew, who played for the Washington Senators, offered the House a chance to kind of celebrate the All-Star game in Washington, D.C. by passing this bill. I just want to make a personal note. I grew up in Eastern Oregon, and my father, who was a star baseball player, is the same age as Herman Killebrew and actually played against him in Eastern Oregon. And then – and also Mel Stottlemyre. And then when I was playing, I played against Mel Stottlemyre's kids. And so this is a really emotional and close to home issue for me.
Yeah. But just to step back, just one step away from home, post office renaming bills are actually really common in Congress. So much so that from 2003 to 2013, nearly 20% of all bills passed were post office renaming bills. Believe it or not, it has dropped a little bit since then, but they have come back in a big way.
See, Congress does get something done.
They do. Just rename a post office.
Wow. Congressman Labrador was an immigration attorney before he entered Congress. There are so many immigration issues going on right now that he is not actively involved in, but by golly, he renamed that post office. He is getting things done.
In defense of Payette and the community, they have done a lot to recognize this guy. They did not wait around for a post office naming. There are museums and ballparks.
That's very true.
And many things named after him and his long and kind of storied career as a charitable and philanthropic force in Idaho.
And one of the things with one of the ballparks that they have out there is that they call it an all-bodied
right.
Kids with disabilities. It's for everyone.
Very
and
cool.
That's one of the coolest things that I think that the city of Payette has done to honor Herman Killebrew. So we had a case going on this week, Bill, and I read about it in the Idaho Statesman and the Idaho Press, actually, Betsy, with the faith healing. There was a Caldwell couple who was arrested. The father accused of molesting his children for years, but the mother saying, well, my job was to pray for him to change his behavior.
That's right. She even went so far to tell the police that although this went on for decades and she was aware of it, her belief system didn't permit her to contact the police or bring in any authorities, and instead she just prayed for this demon to leave her husband while all four of their daughters continued to be molested. It's really a pretty horrifying case. And then the big news that came after that is that this couple is affiliated with the Followers of Christ, and that is a faith healing sect that has been at issue in the legislature's debate over our current exemption in our state law for parents who deny medical care to their kids and the kids die. We don't hold the parents liable under our faith healing exemption, and the legislature has debated but not done anything for years about whether we should keep that law or do away with it. Now, to be fair, that doesn't come into play in the cases of child molestation. In this case, the parents are being held liable, and they are in jail.
But it does show the kind of flaw in the theory that we should somehow let parents deny medical care to their child to the point of death, but that we're going to step in when one of them is being a victim of sexual abuse. I mean, I think it makes the point that there are various levels of child abuse, and we as a state have to take a more active role if we're going to protect children.
I think one of the one of the common misconceptions about the faith healing exemption is authorities can step in various cases. The exemption applies specifically to when the child dies and whether the parents will be held criminally liable. So on the civil side, health and welfare can interfere as long as the child is still alive. That's kind of the messed up thing, is that if the child dies, it's too late to help. It also, as Betsy mentioned, does not apply to sexual abuse or other forms of neglect. So once again, as long as the child is alive, the parents can be prosecuted. It is specifically an exemption for when the child dies, whether those parents can be held accountable.
We are continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My panel of journalists today are Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Bill Manny with Idaho Statesman, and Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television. So our Matt Gillum here at Boise State Public Radio News did a story that ran today about the City of Ontario looking into potentially putting in marijuana dispensaries. And the reason why this is making headlines in Idaho is that if you've driven to Ontario, you know that we're right next to it here in Idaho. So, Bill, this could have an effect on the Treasure Valley potentially.
Well, I think as Matt noted, it would be the closest location to the population center in Idaho, and the folks in Ontario know that that's going to be a big market for them. So I'm curious to see how Idaho law enforcement and lawmakers react. They are dead set against anything that would smack of tolerance toward marijuana. But we do know from our reporting within the last year or two that when Huntington, Oregon, which is further west than Ontario, decided to become a marijuana town, it transformed that place. They had restaurants and gas stations and convenience stores opening and 1A license plates lined up along the streets. So I think it's a fascinating issue. And
they were just going to the restaurant. That's all they were doing.
Having family in Eastern Oregon and having driven through Huntington before and after, I know there is a big difference.
Right. And I believe there are dispensaries in Washington that border Idaho.
Yes.
So you have Whitman County that borders Latah County. And then I believe it's Clarkson bordering Lewiston. But to your point, though, Bill, those are much smaller towns. I mean, this is really the biggest population.
Right. Ontario is much bigger. We're much bigger. And I have not heard a lot about the Moscow Pullman area issue. Maybe some of our other panelists have.
So for Idaho Reports, we did a little bit of reporting up there. And we spoke to local law enforcement, and they said patrolling the border and, you know, trying to bust college kids who are going in from University of Idaho isn't really a big priority for them. The flip side of that is in Lewiston, we spoke to public defenders a couple years ago when Washington's recreational marijuana industry was really getting going in Clarkston and Pullman, those border communities on the Washington side. And they were seeing a huge influx in their people getting charged with misdemeanor possession. And it was overwhelming the public defender's office in Nez Perce County. They were having to talk to the police saying, please stop busting these kids for bringing over marijuana into Idaho, because they were just overwhelmed with work. Right. And, of course, that adds another layer to how overworked our public defenders are in Idaho and the reform efforts that are going on there. So county by county, all of that to say, county by county, it really does vary as far as how much of an emphasis local law enforcement is putting on trying to bust kids.
So,
or adults.
Or adults,
whoever,
right?
Whoever.
So which can, because it's Ada, it's Canyon, but what's the county right bordering Ontario?
Payette,
right?
It's Payette, yeah.
So you bring up a good point, though, Melissa, because in Ada County, I mean, we have one of the largest public defender offices in the state in Ada County. Canyon County has a decent sized one. Payette County, not so much. And so if people were being busted, if they're patrolling the border, all of those cases are going to go to Payette County.
Well, and remember, there's prosecutorial discretion as to what they pursue, right? They have that discretion, and some counties are more aggressive about pursuing things like, you know, possession, right, than other counties. That's going to be, I think, a factor in what we see. Remember, Ontario, as a border community with no sales tax, gets a lot of traffic already from Idaho. Mm-hmm. You know, that's such a porous border as far as the economy goes. You know, we've done a lot of reporting over there as far as how the big box stores in Ontario are really sucking up a lot of the traffic, right? People go grocery shopping in Ontario. People shop for clothes. People shop for cars. People do all of their shopping over there. This is just another thing they're going to add to their grocery carts, I imagine. And how big of an emphasis that's going to how much resources that's going to divert from for law enforcement as far as their attention, mm-hmm. we'll see.
You know, the notion of driving under the influence, put that aside, you know, if you have people participating in illegal activity in Oregon coming into Idaho and having something be illegal, it's just an interesting kind of
right.
law enforcement philosophical thing. As Melissa noted, they will have some prosecutorial discretion. As someone who travels a lot to eastern Oregon and someone who does not plan to purchase or bring marijuana into Idaho.
No one asked you, Bill. That's a strong denial.
Full disclosure.
You know what? Full disclosure, right?
I do not look forward right. to the notion of having a gauntlet of police officers and police cars on the freeway, you know, between here and the Oregon border, or in the rest area along
right on the border.
Which is a very nice rest area and a great place to stop when you're driving home from Pendleton.
I wonder if there are any lessons should this happen, and we don't know yet if they will get the signatures, if it will go on the ballot, if it will be approved. But should this happen, I wonder if there are any lessons from up in the Panhandle, where we have kind of the opposite situation, a very large population area in Washington, in Spokane, that has legal marijuana, and then Kootenai County, which is a significant population for Idaho right across the border. Yet I don't know what their experience has been, and I haven't. And we also have a large number of people from Washington coming over that line to Kootenai County to recreate in Coeur d'Alene. So I wonder if maybe there are lessons for the Boise area should this happen from North Idaho and how they've dealt with it.
And I agree with you. Those are the questions that I wonder about. Is and if the average person understands in the sense of. If you buy something legally, as you said, Bill, you buy it legally in Oregon. Well, guess what? The moment your foot steps into Idaho, it's illegal.
Right. And even if you're not transporting, maybe you're going to have paraphernalia, or maybe it's going to be in your clothes or on your body. I mean, I can just see all kinds of gray areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's in your system and you come, even if you used it, if you used it legally in Oregon or Washington, you come back here and then the next day you get drug tested at work, it's still in your system. You can still be held accountable for that. And I really am curious about what kind of court cases we might see pop out of that, because, you know, what a random worker does in his or her free time in Oregon, is that something that an Idaho employer can fire somebody over? And I think that that's something
and I think
that we're going to have to keep an eye on.
Right, and I think at this point they probably could, because it is their policy. Mm-hmm. However, will our legislature at some point have to take this up and look at this? And it's going to be an interesting discussion, and we haven't heard the last of it at all.
Right.
So, Betsy, you talked about the Idaho Lottery record earnings this year.
That's right. Every year, the lottery presents its dividend to the state, and that's the profits that are turned over to schools and state building maintenance. And this year, it was a record. It was, I believe it was $53.5 million.
$53.5 million.
And that was $5 million more than last year.
Wow.
And Governor Otter, when he received all those oversized checks, was very glad to get them, and he praised the lottery as what he calls the purest form of volunteer taxation. The governor supported the lottery from when the initiative was first proposed in 1986. Then it was overturned in court as unconstitutional. The voters supported a constitutional amendment in 1988. And it really has made a lot of money for Idaho schools and buildings since then.
I love that, though, because we're taxing ourselves. I've never won any money on it. So I'm just giving it away.
I think there would be some gambling experts who would wonder if it's always voluntary for everybody. And you do worry a little about the poor and the elderly who view playing the lottery as their retirement plan.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it has been good and is legal, and I don't think that we should deny people the right to buy lottery tickets if they want. But it's always struck me as kind of an odd thing to celebrate.
Are you arguing for instant horse racing? Is that what I'm hearing?
Stay tuned.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I want to thank all of my guests today. It's always a pleasure to have you guys on Fridays. My panelists today, Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press.